Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California, with Andy Stevens, Owen Main, and Luke Johnson.
Potato. Yes, a potato. Welcome to Fansmanship.
Literally.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. It is Wednesday.
You're not supposed to turn it on mid-sentence.
We don't do this.
No, it's often best to turn on mid-sentence. It's April 16th today. It's Wednesday. And we have the crew in the house, in the Heezy. What up?
Did you guys get money back on your taxes, or did you have to pay?
Luke, I'll let you go first.
A whopping $310 back.
We got a lot back.
Really?
We always overpay during the year.
Now, from what I've heard, is when you actually want to break even. That's the best. I mean, I've talked to numerous tax guys that you actually want to break even.
So the reason, and Andy's a tax guy.
I had to pay $1,100.
Did you really?
And that was, well, I won't get into it. Maybe I cut a few corners, let's just put it that way.
Screw the government. Go to hell, government.
So, the idea.
Is my footprint more than $1,100?
I don't pay none of them taxations.
The idea, Luke, is that if you break even, that means that the government didn't have any of your money. Because if you have money during the year, theoretically, you could make interest on that money. And so that's the reason why you don't want them to have your money all year and then get it back at the end of the year. And then the vice versa is you don't want to have to pay at the end of the year. So, yes, it's ideal to break even if you can.
Well, it's just not taking money out. If you get a 1099, it's not like a W-2 where you're getting money taken out.
1099.
Account for it, so. But anyway,
are you out of your mind?
Back to tax talk.
Tax talk on the Fansmanship.com podcast.
Brought to you by TaxSlayer.com.
So, yeah, it's actually, yeah, we would love a sponsor on the podcast for sure.
TaxSlayer.com. Let's work.
You're calling them out. You're calling them out.
Over the course of the next year, let's work to get them. And then hopefully by next tax day, we will have TaxSlayer.com, the Fansmanship.com.
Here at Fansmanship.com, we don't believe in taxiations.
Brought to you by.
So it is Wednesday. There's a lot going on. College basketball season ended since we talked last.
Wow.
I've been to Dayton and back since we talked last, I think.
Players aren't going to be hungry anymore. They got that going for them.
Yeah. What was the deal there, Andy?
Well, the NCAA, I guess, was still in the Stone Age, but they are in a lot of different regards, but if you remember Shabazz Napier coming out after they won saying, yeah, there's been nights where I've had to go to sleep hungry, and then what do you know, a few days later the NCAA comes out and says we will now allow unlimited food and beverage for
unlimited food.
Wow.
Ooh. Yeah, I know.
Ooh.
But finally,
but guess what? Here's what's going to happen.
You know what they came out with? Lean pockets. Finally.
Here's what's going to happen.
Gaffigan fit.
If you're at Ohio State or if you're at like USC, you're going to have crazy, crazy good snacks that are available to you. Mm-hmm. And if you're at like Cal State, whatever, Cal State Northridge or I don't know. I don't know what.
Like Louisiana Lafayette.
Well, not their baseball team. Their baseball team's ranked second. But if you're like on their basketball
team. Bowling Green.
Yeah.
You're going to get like catfish head.
Well, there's only
catfish head stew.
There's only five programs that actually profit. Isn't that the truth?
That's what they say.
That's what they say.
Oh, my gosh. Get out of here.
The books get cooked.
Well, look at Texas. Don't they make like in the tens of millions of dollars?
They all make a bunch of money on these kids. It's the biggest
thing I've ever heard.
Well, football programs are what pay for the rest of the sports.
Yeah, and they can also. They cook books for bowl games to say that they don't make money out of bowl games, but they actually do. So I don't really buy any of that.
Me either.
We're right into baseball season, too. We've had about 3 weeks of the baseball season that's passed, or we're in the third week, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Third week.
Dodgers and Giants are tied atop the NL West, and the Angels, despite how bad they're playing, I think are only two games under .500 after their last three.
That's true.
And they've lost to the A's, I think, last night, and the A's have the second-best record in baseball. They have 10 wins. They're one of two teams with double-digit wins. And the Angels are like
6-8.
So, Luke, what's going on with the Angels? you know, they had a big payroll last year. They signed Pujols. They signed Hamilton. They signed a couple pitchers, C.J. Wilson. And they're
still paying Vernon Wells,
They gave, like, the Dodgers are still paying, like, Bobby Bonilla. Yeah. They gave.
Smartest contract ever.
By Bonilla? $1 million a year for a long time. Right. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. And Weaver, they're also paying a lot too. Mm-hmm. Mike Trout, they just signed to a contract. And,
thank God.
Yeah, right.
6 years, 144.
They bought out. So I think they bought out like two or three of Trout's free agent years.
Correct.
And overpaid for his earlier years to buy out his free agent years, because by the time he gets to be a free agent,
it'll be 28.
It's going to be a jillion dollars.
Who was it at spring training that had the story where they talked to Vernon Wells? And was it Evan, I think? He said, I talked to Vernon Wells. He goes, man, I just like to play, man. I don't care. I don't care anything about the money.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
right, dude.
He met Vernon Wells, and Vernon Wells was like, man, I know I'm getting old, but I just love to play baseball.
What was his contract? Like $65 million or something like that? He got a pretty good contract.
He loved $15 million a year to stand around and kick the ball like it's a soccer ball.
I think he was like 6 years, $99
million. Yeah, it was a big contract. So, yeah. Luke, what's up with the Angels now? They're 1-3 in the last
few games.
Well,
a whole lot of the same
BS. Pretty hot. You were pretty hot coming in today about the Angels.
A whole lot of the same BS. See, I was an Artie Moreno believer until about 2 years ago. Okay, the beauty of Mike Socha is he wins with a couple really good players. Like, so if we had maybe, you know, in the past he had Vladimir Guerrero and Torii Hunter, and he made playoff teams out of those guys with a bunch of sort of, you know, run heavy players who hit 260, 270, but were kind of gritty ball players. This Artie Moreno era was really great because he brought in guys like Albert Pujols, which seemed exciting at the beginning.
Right.
Guys like C.J. Wilson, he signed Weaver, right. He locked up Trout. There are some benefits to an owner like him, but the result is...
I think you'd rather have Artie Moreno than like the Marlins ownership or somebody, right?
But I would like a little more balance. So like this year, I was hoping, okay, we spent a lot of money on Pujols, whatever, I'm over it, it's year three. He'll eventually have a good year
of
again.
10? Year three of 10?
He'll eventually have a good year again.
He'll never be as good though.
No.
Right.
Josh Hamilton's going to bounce back, which he did until he got hurt. He was playing well early to start.
Yeah, let's dive head first into first base. That's a great decision.
Puig did that too.
Way to work that one through. Jeez. What are these guys thinking?
I was over the big signings as long as he locked
the
down
first
a
week.
As long as he locked down a better bullpen in the offseason, I would have been fine with these big guys.
Yeah, I don't know
guys.
Anybody out of their bullpen. Do they still have even like Scott Downs? Who's
no,
they don't even
have
Downs.
They have that one guy, Ernesto.
Frieri, and he blew a save 2 nights ago.
Ernesto,
but other than that, I don't know anyone
proud,
else
son.
Out of their bullpen, like Darren
O'Day
or something like
that. I think
that.
This year's Angels team sums up the last year and whatever, almost a month now. They've scored 32 runs the last four games. They're 1-3. Why? Because their bullpen's given up, I think, like 9 runs.
And that tells the story right there. Your
runs.
Offense may be able to put up numbers, but there's such an unbalance between offense and pitching. Plus, they went out and get a guy like David Freese. He's not really hitting yet. So what do you do there? Who do you
put in? I was listening to like the FanGraphs podcast or something. They were saying that David Freese and his peripheral numbers were just not great, and that the Cardinals totally fleeced them on that deal.
Yeah,
well, it was a win-win for both teams because the Angels needed a third baseman because they got rid of Trumbo.
But Freese is like in his early 30s already. It's
and
not like
the Cardinals needed that extra speedy outfielder at the top of the lineup because they got Bourgeois or Borges.
Right.
Peter Borges, right?
Yeah, that was who they got.
I was okay with the deal because Borges was the fifth outfielder in a pretty –
Yeah,
you know,
see, the Angels
deep
didn't
outfield
need
team.
They had a deep outfield but needed a third
our
base.
Starting outfield until Hamilton got hurt was Hamilton, Trout, and Calhoun with J.B. Shuck, who actually had a great rookie year last year. He hit like 291. Because,
see, the Cardinals wanted to move Matt Carpenter over to third all along because they signed Mark Ellis to play second. They wanted Carpenter to play third. So.
Right.
The Angels are second in the league in runs. They're 78.
So that's not bad.
And they're below 500. See,
They also have the most home runs in baseball. They have 23.
Wow.
Trout's having a great year, as we expected. Pujols is hit with power again, but still has a low hit for average. But
Trout has the like of the top five people. Trout's in terms of like WAR so far this year. Trout has the lowest batting average of balls in play, BABIP.
Yes.
So like in other words, he's been the least lucky, but he still has a super high WAR because he's Mike Trout.
Well, yeah, there's a stat out right now that Trout until last night's game when he hit a 2-run homer to tie the game in the 9th until we of course blew it in the 10th. That's kind of the year we're having already. was 0-4-9 with runners in scoring position, but six of those were line drives to either third base or shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he's been very unlucky.
Right.
And also a guy like Eric Ibar at the top of the lineup, it's surprising that they've scored so many runs when he hasn't really done a lot yet.
Actually I like what they've done. They've stuck Ibar somewhere between 7 and 9 in the lineup.
Okay, so he's not hitting
lead. And they have
anymore.
Calhoun leading off.
Oh, okay.
Calhoun's tearing it up right now.
Calhoun's 8 for his last 12 hitting, but then he actually rolled his ankle last night. Running
yeah,
the first.
I heard about that. Yeah, we saw him hit a walk-off, a home run in spring yeah. training, remember? Evan's yeah. like, I'm picking him. And then he drafted him and then dropped him in like the first week. Yeah, way to go, buddy. That really worked out for him.
So the Angels are
I call dibs.
Are going to be it's an like, interesting well. Team to watch all year because they're this team that's fighting all the trends. So, like, you
correct.
Know, if you look at Baseball Reference or Fangraphs or any of those things, you know, you see these downward trends for these players like Josh Hamilton and Albert Pujols, and you see these numbers of guys who generally when they're their age – you know, really start to decline quite a bit. Jared Weaver's fastball isn't
that's
what it
another
used to
problem
be.
Too. Is Weaver is not the
he
same.
He throws like high 80s now.
He's actually never thrown hard. He's always thrown about 89, but
he used to throw like 92 though.
90, on a 91, really on a really good day,
his control is what's really struggling. He'd throw a lot of strikes and
yeah.
Pass.
One thing that people
off.
Have always assumed that about Weaver, he's a power pitcher. He's actually not.
No, but
he
there's
throws,
a difference
he throws
between
a
91
killer
and 88.
He throws five different pitches for
yes.
strikes at any point in the count.
But
that's what his strength is.
But if you look at like the one thing that if what you're saying is that independent of fielding, FIP, the FIP number, is field-independent pitching, the one thing that you can do to make that number go up, and that's kind of the how good of a pitcher are you, how valuable are you actually,
right.
The one thing you can do to make that, you know, that number better.
Strike guys out,
and in order to strike guys out, you got to throw harder. You can't strike guys out as much during 88.
No. Weaver's problem since the injury last year has been what Andy said: his placement. He's throwing a lot of balls. He's
but it's easier
a lot
to strike
players.
Guys out if you throw 94 versus 88.
I don't know.
Sometimes.
I think
it's
if you have movement, I think if you have movement on your fastball. I think Greg Maddux. Yeah.
There would be a direct correlation if you did the two numbers, strikeouts and average velocity.
I don't know.
Strike out more guys.
I watched a really good reliever last night.
But changing speeds has a lot to do with strike. I mean, that's the thing they always say. You could throw it up there 100 miles an hour. If you don't have any movement, they're going to hit it out of the park.
What's the one thing you could say about Cardinals pitchers? The World Series champions.
They all are in the mid-90s.
They're all throwing hard.
Yeah. And they have movement on their fastball.
And they're the World Series champions.
Okay, exactly. But throwing hard
isn't
enough.
And they're guys that no one had really ever seen up to that point either.
I think throwing hard has become... I think if you really pay attention, throwing hard is an overrated factor. I really do. I think it's about placement. It's about movement on your...
I can agree that it's somewhat overrated,
it's about
but at the
speed,
same time, there is some value to it.
It's about speed, differentiation.
There's so many different ways to get guys out, you know. But yes, I'm gonna have to go with Owen on this one. Throwing harder does help. Let's have
movements on your pitch.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure. Fair enough. Speaking of throwing hard and going hard, our very own Luke's favorite Yasiel Puig, also along with Cole Calhoun or somebody else. Who are you saying dove into first? Josh Hamilton. Yeah, and Puig did too this year. Early in the season, Puig's thumb got sprained. But this week, the story wasn't about his thumb or anything else. It was about him and how he got here from Cuba. And we always knew that there was some shadiness to it. There were rumors that the Mexican drug lords, the cartels were involved. And at this point, you know, the story in the LA Daily News was really interesting about it. And they had pretty good sources. The one thing that struck me, you know, people talk about Puig being so immature. And this guy just, you know, he needs to grow up and blah, blah, blah. This guy was stuck in a seedy Mexican hotel with guys like basically kidnapped him to there. And they weren't going to let him go until they got paid by somebody else. And so his, you know, his life experience is unlike, I would argue, you know, 99% of anybody who's in the major leagues, minus maybe other guys who are Cuban in the league. But I just really think it's interesting to read about and know a little bit more about him and where he's coming from. And I don't know. Andy, did you read that article?
Yeah. My question is, do you think now that we've read that and we kind of have an idea of what he went through, does it make it more or less what's the word I'm looking for? Do you
like acceptable?
Yeah. Do you accept? Do you have sympathy more or less for how wild and out of control he is? Like, do you think it's a situation where he's going now? Okay, I made it through a life and death situation. I'm playing with house money right now. I'm just going to let her rip. You think it's that kind of attitude, or that he's just really immature, and hasn't quite come around to the way American baseball is played yet?
Yeah, I think the way American baseball is played yet thing is an interesting dialogue and dynamic. I don't think it's true as much as people say it is. Yes, he plays super aggressively. Yes, he misses his cutoff man sometimes, but he hits his cutoff man way more than he misses him. And when he hits his cutoff man, nobody says anything except for a few, like, of the Dodger fans. Guys,
you're doing what you're supposed
to. Sure.
What about the showing up late to stuff?
Oh, that was ridiculous. And I don't know if you read the article too. The guy with the Panama hat who used to be the radar gun man that would stand behind the plate at Dodger
Stadium. Had the cigar.
I think his name is Mike Garrido. He scouted Fernando and was the guy who got Fernando to the Dodgers. One time we sat in the dugout section and my sister got his autograph because he was like the radar gun man. My sister was super stoked to get the radar gun man's autograph because he was always on TV. But Garrido went up to Puig and basically said, you have this opportunity in front of you, and if you screw it up at this point, it's on you. And, it's going to be because of you, not because of anybody else. And I thought that was really interesting. Yes, I think at this point, Andy, the stuff about him being late and not knowing or acting like he doesn't know, this is his second year now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crazy. And he didn't play that game. And so I think what you see with Puig, and this is kind of what I'm coming to in terms of like acceptance of Puig, is that he's going to be kind of like having Manny Ramirez on your team at Manny's craziest. Is that sometimes there's just crazy stuff that somebody does. Manny got benched during games. Manny,
yeah, but my question
Manny complained
still
about
remains.
Something.
Do you think he is just hit the whole quote unquote Manny way is just ingrained in him, or it's something that because he's young he can grow out of? Is he Manny for the rest of his career, or can he become
Manny for his whole career? Would you say was Manny for his whole career?
I love Manny Ramirez.
No, but the funny thing is, once the older Manny got, the more Manny he got.
Yeah,
right?
So that
he got more Manny.
Right? But it was more lovable once he actually put up numbers for a number of seasons.
He put up numbers
right?
his whole career.
For a number of seasons. Right. So I think that's the difference, and I think why isn't necessarily the question to be asking. Why is not the right question? I think the right question is, can he be productive acting like that? Because I don't think for me to expect him to act way differently over the course of a whole year is something that I can reasonably expect. So I have to kind of either say, okay.
I'm talking year to year. I'm talking like next year, the year after.
So I'm saying,
will it improve?
I'm saying if my hope is that it improves and that's what I'm basing my, oh, this is great or this is not great based on, that, I'm going to be disappointed.
Okay.
I think what I need to be based on is, how is he going to help the team? Is he going to show up when he needs to? Is he going to show up 99% of the time? If they make the playoffs, is he going to do something stupid? A lot of those things were really magnified last year in the playoffs. But he also played awesome against Atlanta. He was a good player in the early playoff rounds. He was somebody who led them to the playoffs. His energy and spark. You need a little bit of that kind of young buck mentality on your team. Everybody who makes the playoffs and who in a long grinding season, you got to have a guy like that. Any team who's going to be anything
That's
is going to have a guy like that. And so
and,
again,
and yeah, and to be fair to Puig, I mean, baseball is still ran by the old sort of generation.
Guild.
And I'm sorry, we can all relate. I think even coming from a younger generation in America, which I want to make that point because we are from different cultures, I think we would even call BS on that sort of old baseball mentality. Like, you have to be bland and boring to play baseball.
Like,
I also, to be fair, it gets old. And to be fair to Puig, too, he does come from a very, like, romantic culture. I mean, they're all about music and
passion.
Food and passion and culture.
Passion.
It's like and
a beautiful place
beautiful
culturally.
Conversation and wine and staying
dramatic,
up late.
Right, yeah.
Beyond
well,
the communism
no, they're just
and
very,
the dictatorship.
But I mean, to be fair to him, his culture is very...
passionate and dramatic.
It's passionate. And so naturally, we have to try to understand where he comes from. I don't think he needs to fit the American mold.
Yeah.
I think Owen's right. I think some of the stuff you can obviously curb over time. Absolutely. I think he will. To be fair to the kid, he for one, he's young. For two, He's a great player. And for three, I mean, yeah, he probably sparks some of those guys that are stuck in a rut there.
So, seriously. So what you're saying
and he makes baseball fun.
It's worth the trade-off.
Now, in relationship to the story you guys have told me that you kind of clued me in on in relationship to how he got here, I want to play devil's advocate a little bit.
Yeah.
I think sometimes these stories, not doubting the source, not doubting the truth of it, sometimes can be colorized.
Embellished.
It sounds a little too Hunter S. Thompson to me.
Hyperbole.
It's a little too this happened, then that happened, and this happened. It's a little too musy Hunter S. Thompson to me. I'm not saying that there isn't truth to it. I'm saying that.
And to be fair, you haven't read the whole thing yet.
I'm saying, though, as a devil's advocate, I don't think it's a reach to think that there's a possibility someone in the Puig camp, through advice, had the embellished story released as an attempt to save face a little bit. No. Because Puig's getting a lot of assassination right now.
It wasn't about his character. It was just about all the crazy stuff he went
through. But that story, like you're saying, that story changes the way we maybe view Puig. Did it go off?
No, it's fine. Yeah, we're good.
That story, I think for a lot of guys, changes how they think of Puig.
Yeah.
No, it does. Yeah. And I'm not doubting the truth again. I'm saying that to be fair, though, and to kind of try to be maybe a pragmatic thinker, not just buy into the story.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's just as fair to say someone in his camp paid off the story break to save his character.
Right.
That's just as
I think that's garbage because it is a legitimate news organization.
Legitimate news nowadays, yeah. Really?
No. This is. I mean, if you read the story, there's so many details that you can't make up.
That gets us into a whole different debate. I mean, is there really such thing as like legitimate news in America anymore?
This article is, if you read it, it's as good as anything else that you're going to hear. And on top of it, there are other stories. There was one about a bunch of Coast Guard guys, because it wasn't Puig's first time trying to defect. I don't know if you knew, but he tried to defect a few other times. One time a Coast Guard boat basically intercepted his boat, and all these people are on it, these old people and kids and whatever.
He grabbed the fin of a shark.
There's this 22. Yeah, he wrote it like the Fonz. he jumped it. Yeah. No. There's this 20 year old kid who's sitting there too, who looks totally out of place, who's like super buff, and they ask him, and it's totally Yasiel Puig. You know, 2 years before he actually made it over here, and he was nice to the Coast Guard. You know, they tell a story about this quiet guy who's just kind of like hanging out and like whatever. But to kind of colorize his whole journey. I mean, anybody's journey from Cuba to the U.S. I think it makes him somebody who's a little bit more
sympathetic. There's a beautiful sympathetic journey there. Absolutely.
It makes him a little bit more sympathetic, to your point. I think it does help him, but absolutely. I actually don't think he wanted it out, because he probably still has guys who don't want him to be talking about it.
Exactly.
If it's true, and it is, he put out a statement today later. He said, I won't be making any statements about this.
He probably kicked him down a man box each.
All right, Coast Guard jobs that matter. Okay, great. So what you're saying, back to your point about Puig, though, is you're saying that to try to, quote unquote, Americanize him is too much of a trade-off, and you're losing more than you will gain.
Like the rest, like all of us here talking right now, we love baseball. I love baseball for what it is, but I also know that baseball has to grow with the times, and baseball isn't a 1940s suit and tie sport anymore. It's just not, or it shouldn't be. And I think that there's a lot of old elites that are trying to keep it that way. And I think Puig is cool because he challenges the status quo. I want to give him his due. That's a cool thing. I'm into that.
Yeah.
And like I said, he comes from another culture, and we should try to understand his culture. Who is Yasiel Puig? You know, besides even how he got here, Let's talk about who he is before he got here.
Does his level of talent give him more leeway as to accept my culture?
Anybody
does. How many Latin guys have come over that if they acted the way Puig did, they'd be sent on a boat back to Cuba?
Everybody's
talent.
I
like your point.
Everybody's talent allows them to be more of an a-hole.
Yeah.
Like whoever you are.
That's true.
If Kobe Bryant played like Jody Meeks, he wouldn't be probably in the league still.
He wouldn't be saying what he said in his tweet.
Right. What did he say in his tweet, Andy? He said this league was
He said the season was S, and next year is going to be epic.
There you go.
Got it. Yeah, so epic, dude. It's going to be epic.
Epic.
It's going to be so epic, bro.
I don't know, that's such a surfer thing to say. It's going to be epic.
Outside.
We know a lot of guys who like to get outside.
Stoney and Coke is stuck.
Yeah. What do you have tonight? A Stoke? What's that? Stoley and Coke? Yeah, you can thank my boy Ballin for that one.
I also used the word epic today when I tweeted from the Fansmanship account. You can follow us at Fansmanship about the Cal Poly, Cal State Fullerton series coming up this weekend. The Mustangs are...
Hell of a segue there, Owen. I like that.
Yeah, you like that?
That
yeah.
was good.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'll take the bows.
Props where props are due.
I'm proud of you.
thank you. So the Mustangs are playing Cal State Fullerton. The Titans have fallen out of the rankings generally now. They're probably like between 25 and 30. They're still amazingly talented, though. Their third starter, Phil Bickford, was, I think, the 10th pick overall last year.
Phil Bickford. What a name.
They missed the leadership skills of Kurt Suzuki.
Listen, Suzuki's been in the league for like 10 years.
He's like the
never
league
been
anymore.
The same.
He's like retired already. Yeah. Do you still play for the A's or something?
He's actually really good, you guys.
I think he's on the Nationals. Was. I think he's a backup catcher on the Nationals.
Yeah, so, but Fullerton Maybe. Had a junior that got picked 10th overall last year who came back, and he's their third starter this year, is Bickford. Wow. And so he'll be pitching on Saturday this week in
10th overall.
San Luis. Yeah. Like,
to who?
I don't even know. Phillies? No, I don't know who.
They don't play on Sunday, right, because of Easter.
Right. So they're Thursday, Friday, Saturday this week instead of Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Mm-hmm. They got Eshelman, I think, is there.
6 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 1 o'clock?
I think so, yeah. Right. And the Mustangs are 31-5. They've played
Numero tres.
They've played some real good teams this year. They've played like at UCLA, they won 2 out of 3. They split 2 games at USC. They beat Cal 2 out of 3. They swept Kansas State. So they've played teams from bigger conferences and beat them. And then they've beat the hell out of other teams like Wagner and any other team.
Cal State Bakersfield last night.
Baco, they won 9-1 last night in Bakersfield. They've swept Hawaii and Davis in conference, and they won 2 out of 3 from Santa Barbara.
Those games versus Hawaii were pretty close, though. Those are good games.
Yeah, but and that's the thing that they're doing this year. They're winning close games. They're winning games that aren't close.
Right.
Reed Riley's he gets 3-inning saves.
That's pretty. That's
and then he comes back the next day and pitches
an
inning.
You got stones if you run out there with a 1-run lead for three innings. To get 9
that's,
outs.
That's how they do it. I mean,
that's awesome.
That's who Reed Riley is. He's a guy who also got I think he got drafted last year as well, and he came back and he's a guy who doesn't throw the hardest, but he's super spot on in terms of accuracy.
Seems like he has a really good sinker. He's got a
sinker.
He's got a really good downhill movement on his ball.
And he's tall.
Now, Owen, you've watched probably the most of the Mustangs this year. Definitely the Mustangs baseball team
out of you three.
Now,
us three.
Yeah, us three. Yeah. Now, I'm a firm believer in team chemistry, and I would have a feeling that this year's team, we're talking about close games, winning close games, has that chemistry.
Yeah.
But I also, I mean, I'm assuming that they've probably had like some great talent in the past. Baseball's such a chemistry sport.
Yeah.
What is it about this year's team? Give me a couple players you think have been the gel. Like what? Like who's sort of sparking?
Who has been the gel?
Yeah, who has been the gel? Yeah,
he's their
catcher.
Okay.
He's probably the best defensive catcher in the conference. I think you could probably say that. Or if not, then there's nobody better than him. I think he calls a great game. He hits ninth. And he leads the team in RBIs, I think, or he's right up there in RBIs.
Okay.
He hits homers. He drives in runs. He squeeze bunts. He kind of does it all at the plate.
That's an awesome guy to have in the nine hole to be able to produce like that.
Right.
And turn,
he's super.
Turn
he's a super slow
like
small catcher.
Is he like Pudge Rodriguez
with a little bit of pop? Right. He's not as fast though. He's super slow. Like Pudge could steal a base.
Didn't he play second base when he was younger? And they
played first.
He became a catcher.
And his brother is on the team too, Michael. Who I think. But who's definitely a guy who's a senior. He didn't have a great year last year. He split time with Elliott Stewart last year, and this year like the job is his. There's nobody else really catching. Brian Mundell's also listed as a catcher, but he had Tommy
DHs
John or rotator cuff surgery. Yeah, he's just the full-time DH. If you're asking me who the gel guys are, there's two things. Let me tell you.
Compared to last year.
Yeah. So one is that they have better pitching depth.
Who created that depth?
Casey Bloomquist was their weekday starter and sometimes Sunday starter last year.
Okay.
And kind of was so, you know, when they got past Wagman and Imhoff last year, they weren't really sure what they were going to get from their starting pitching. Bloomquist is like 9-0 this year.
Oh, wow.
With like an ERA under 2. So,
he worked hard in the offseason.
He got a few more miles an hour on his fastball, and he's just been nails. And he's their Sunday starter. So whatever happens on Friday and Saturday – you know, however depleted your bullpen is, you got Bloomquist coming out on Sunday.
Who's that 9-0? Freshman they have that's really good, too, though?
So we have two freshmen that are starters as well.
So those
are
the guys I want to hear about.
There's four starting pitchers. There's
the freshman
Imhoff
I want to hear about.
Yeah, and if you ask me, the glue guy, I think it's Jimmy Allen. He's a third baseman. He also
seems
got drafted.
Seems like he's been around for like 6 years or something.
Yeah, he was a junior last year. He was supposed to be, you know, probably drafted a little bit higher, but he didn't have a great year last year until the
postseason.
There's
another guy that he was a left fielder, then he came in and played third base. Right?
And he played left field for like one game, I think, and he started like 150 consecutive games at Cal Poly since he was a freshman. Yeah, he's ridiculous. He's a glue guy. He makes contact. He makes all the plays defensively, and he's a leader. I mean, he played for the Blues this summer. Like he is, he's kind of the leader guy out there.
How good defensively is Van Gansen?
Really good. Really good. So everybody's got a role. You know, Allen plays good D at third. Van Gansen is.
But these two freshman pitchers obviously.
Like a vacuum.
Gelled a really solid starting rotation.
Slaterly is one of them. And so Lee pitched a complete game shutout at UCLA in his second collegiate start. as a freshman. And then he proceeded to kind of fall off a little bit. He had three or four bad starts where he gave up a lot of runs. Cal Poly still won a few of those. You know, they've only lost five games all year. But I think like two or three of them might have been on Lee's watch. And so Larry Lee, the coach, moved him to the weekend or the weekday for some of the time. And put Justin Calameni, who's from San Jose, who was the weekend or the weekday starter to the Saturday game. So they have their least experienced out of the three weekend starters, probably the third starter out of those guys actually starts on Saturday, starts in the middle of the series every weekend.
That's how you win games too.
Yeah.
Just putting those three
right.
guys.
And I want to be honest, I've talked to a lot of guys who've watched a lot of Cal Poly baseball over the last 30 years.
Yeah.
I mean, older guys, my dad being one of them, a lot of his friends who really love Cal Poly baseball. And up until this season, well, maybe last year they were kind of still on the, yeah, they were on the fence until this season about Larry Lee.
Uh-huh.
Just being honest, I want to, Owen, tell me, what does a season like this do for, I think, a local legend like Larry Lee? I mean, he's already kind of like has sort of a name about him in the area.
Well, he's deeply ingrained. I mean, coming from Cuesta.
But, I mean, I was hearing a lot of local fans kind of calling for his head last year.
If I'm not mistaken, his parents, when he was growing up, were professors at Cal Poly.
Wow.
He went to Slo High. He coached at a few other places and then came to Cuesta.
So he's definitely a local legend.
He was the coach at Cuesta for like 15 years.
I remember it was 99, I think.
He's been coach at Cuesta way before. Yeah, he was started in the 80s, I think, coaching at Cuesta. And then coached at Cuesta till, like 99 or sometime. And he's been coaching at Cal Poly now for 14 or 15 years. And so, yes, he is San Luis Obispo college baseball, I think. You know, you see a lot of guys from teams like Cal Poly who kind of get a good offer from somewhere else and go somewhere else. I would actually be surprised if something like that happened with Larry Lee, just because of the fact that he is so, like you said, ingrained. His system is ingrained. He knows what he wants out of his players. If you look at his face, whether his team hits a home run or whether his team makes five errors and looks like they don't know what they're doing out there, his face is the same. But the point
I was trying to make was that I understand that about Larry Lee.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of fans over the last couple of years that I've talked to who watch a lot of Cal Poly baseball who were sort of doubting him. Like, they weren't doubting him as being a local sort of legendary name.
But is this the guy to take
him
to the next
step? But is this really
the
guy to make us, you know, a perennial top 25 competitor?
Here were some of the criticisms.
So what does this season do?
Here were some of the criticisms: that he bunts too much, right? He gave up a lot of outs over the past
few
years.
You guys use aluminum bats. What
so
are you
his,
doing?
So his leadoff? Well, and it's weird because he hasn't bunted as much this year.
I believe in the bunt.
Well, and he hasn't bunted as much this
Me
year.
Too.
Even though the aluminum bats now in college baseball are kind of like wood bats.
Yeah,
they have zero pop.
Yep.
They're dead. Like, if you hit a home run in college baseball,
it means a dead aluminum bat.
It means you really hit a home run. And so it's kind of weird because he's bunted less this year, but his team is so they're offensive. Like, they have Nick Torres in right field, who's their third hitter, who's going to get drafted this year. They have Brian Mundell, who's a sophomore, who DHs and hits cleanup, who just has a ton of power. He led their team in home runs last year. I think he hit 11. It was a freshman record for Cal Poly. You have Allen, who can have his little pop, who can go yard. And then you got a lot of guys who are just good, like, gap hitters, just make contact. Jordan Ellis is a good bunter, too.
Gap to gap.
Yeah, man. You just have a really well-put-together lineup. And the only thing that I think could hold them back is if those freshmen in a playoff situation can't get it together. But they also have three or four guys in the bullpen, including Brian Granger, who's been really good lately. He was a starter last year. These freshmen came in, and Granger's in the bullpen now. He's kind of the long relief guy, but he's come in a few times and pitched one or two innings against Santa Barbara. He pitched in two of the games in the series that they won as well. So they have a little more depth in terms of their pitching this year. They've developed that, and I think it could be the difference in terms of winning or being more competitive in a regional. And that regional is one that they might host here.
Kind of like a perfect storm that's coming through, because now you're starting to get the players, the systems in place,
absolutely,
and you're going to get all this extra exposure now going to the playoffs, hopefully. I think it's kind of a perfect storm.
Does this season take Larry Lee's name beyond the local level?
Yeah, he's.
You'd hope it would.
You could say what you want about him locally, like whether fans have been stoked about him or whatever. He's well respected.
People that I've talked to have never doubted that.
I talked to Shotgun Spratling a week or two ago, and he covers all the Southern California teams, and I think how people feel about Larry Lee, like he is solid. Like he's well known, not just in the West Coast. He's well known in places. And yes, it will take his name across the country, and I think, anytime you have a college team, whether it's basketball or baseball or football, the coach or the manager is somebody who they talk about a lot, especially for color commentators who maybe haven't watched Cal Poly all the time. Larry Lee is this way, and so his team must be this way too, right?
How cool would it be for Cal Poly, to make the big dance in basketball and then to go to Omaha in baseball
for the first time, in both cases?
Right.
I mean, we'd have to have to get a plane ticket, right?
And Owen,
one of us would have to fly to Nebraska, right?
Let's just keep musing on this topic.
I'll let you do that.
What would this mean to the city of San Luis Obispo and the Cal Poly sports if this baseball team made a serious run in the tourney?
I actually think hosting a regional is going to be a big deal for them. I think that having the event actually in your town, people get to talk about that event. All the fans of the three other teams.
It'll be standing room only, I'll tell you.
And it'll be standing room only. It'll be people will get geeked about it.
We're going to have our passes, though, so we're good, right? I want to make sure.
People will get geeked about it.
How many people do you think would come Cal Poly Regional or Super Regional?
I don't know how many they'd let in. It's about how many they'd let in
But we're cool with our passes. Just say yes or no.
You think 5,000 people could fit around there?
I don't think so.
No.
I think you'd probably have around three.
Three.
I think they had like 2,400 at a game, one of the Santa Barbara games, and they didn't have seats for everybody, obviously, so they had a lot of standing people. Now they have 2,400 seats, but there's a lot less room to stand, and so it'll be interesting to see where people do stand, how and whether they stand, whether people find seats now.
There'll be people standing out on the little where the parking lot is out behind the fence.
Yeah, up on the curb.
Kind of like what do they call it? Strawberry Hill up in Berkeley. Find a little spot between the trees and get out the binocs.
So this is what I always thought they should do: is build that berm up super high, like at Sinsheimer.
That'd be cool.
I love the berm at Sinsheimer because you can sit out on the grass. I mean, they need to extend that somewhere.
Oh, you
somewhere.
Mean a squash behind home plate?
Behind home plate. Not even behind home plate, but like up above Kruko's.
I would agree.
Like you could build a berm up there or on the other side somehow. I mean, you could make that courtyard like a berm.
Well, that's probably going to be in their future now. They're getting that kind of exposure.
They keep winning. They keep getting exposure. Yeah, these things are going to happen. And that's, we talked about facilities a couple times ago, guys. And
talking about Mott Gym,
Mott Athletic Center,
please.
And Baggett Stadium is great. It's super. It's pretty new.
There's room for that stadium to definitely.
But there's
grow.
Room for
that
it to
stadium
grow.
Would be awesome.
And the way that you get facilities money is by winning. Calero and Oberhelman tweeted that they have almost 600,000 of the 750,000 they need for new scoreboard and video boards on each two of them in Mott. So that's kind of what they're going for next. In there, but I don't think they'd be there if they didn't win, right? And so you got to win first, and then people come with their checkbooks open when you're a winner. It's something that happens. It's really interesting and really
big
exciting.
Bucks.
Yes, Luke, for San Luis Obispo, it would mean a lot. It would mean exposure. It would mean all the things that
and they wouldn't call us Pomona. Like
that is my biggest pet peeve.
Remember that?
There's no comparison.
Bully Pomona.
So the way that the branding works, guys, just to be clear, because branding is a big deal, right? The way that it works, this is Cal Poly. It's not Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. It's just Cal Poly.
Right.
This is the Cal Poly.
Yeah.
We are Cal Poly is what they
we
say.
We are Cal Poly.
That's what they say.
We are Cal Poly. Da, 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 da.
Yeah. They have to put the Pomona on the end of their name.
Yeah, go ahead. That's
go
fine.
Ahead.
Because athletically, they don't – what do they
There's
have?
No comparison.
They're Division II.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're the Broncos.
Do they even play football?
No.
In fact, you know what?
Football. All right,
so a little bit of a jab. So a little bit of a jab, guys. When I hear Cal Poly Pomona, I always think of the high school Poly Pomona. Burn.
Is there a high school called Poly Pomona?
Burn.
I don't even think there's a high school called
Deep
that.
Reference.
There is. Something Poly Pomona, there is.
There's. I think there's Long Beach Poly. I think Burn. That's what you're thinking. You're crazy. All right. God. Did Dino just poop in here?
I think he probably farted.
Dude, your dog is foul.
Boston Terriers fart and snore.
Oh, my God.
Your dog is disgusting. Dude.
They take in a lot of air when they breathe. And they eat. They take
I
a
love
lot
how
of
Andy's,
air.
And he's just telling us about it.
All right.
Well, thankfully, I have no sense of smell, so
oh,
it's really? The perfect dog for me.
Oh my God.
Next up, we're going to talk about the NBA a little bit.
Yeah, really quick. I you know, we,
and I'm a
we
deep
just
sleeper.
Have a, we just so. Have a few minutes. I want to get your guys' thoughts.
My eyes burn.
Andy brought his dog into the garage today, and Luke and I are...
He's a farter and a snore. Get over it.
So
he eats dog food. What do you want from him?
Who do you guys got win the NBA point. Finals? I just want to know who's going to win the NBA.
I'm still sticking with the Thunder over the Pacers.
Really? So
really?
Here's I'm with Luke Whoa. In that it's pretty simple. Miami wins the championship until otherwise noted.
Like in the story of LeBron, he gets three. You know, in a row.
Yeah.
It's like, because
Kobe
sense.
Did and Jordan got it twice. And
I have a bet with a friend for $50. He has the Heat. I have everyone else.
God. Maybe we should put Dino in the Heat's locker room if you really want the Heat to lose and lock the door.
Totally.
So you guys
tonight
think...
for Game 7, LeBron has said he has the stomach flu. He has the stomach flu. He will not perform.
LeBron is in a coma, a Boston Terrier-induced coma.
And all the people who hate LeBron hate him more because he pulls off like a Jordan flu game.
But it's really
still drops like 43.
Especially because Dino just went in his locker room. Yeah, exactly.
You're going to drop in my locker room? I'm going to go out and drop 43.
So Andy, you think the Pacers are going to get by the Heat this year? Why?
Well,
wow.
You know, they've had such a downturn, but the funny thing is they still got the number one seed.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think home court advantage goes a long way.
Okay.
And I think, I don't know, I don't know what their issue is as far as
Roy Hibbert
internally
is the issue.
With their team, but I can just... I can see something happening where they turn it around and they win a game 7.
I think if Miami was going to lose, it was going to be last year. The second one is always
like
the
that.
Hardest.
I like that.
The Lakers, the Ori shot was during their second championship
right.
run against Sacramento. The finals wasn't
shot,
that big a deal.
Is Chris Bosh still hurt?
It doesn't. I mean, I think Miami just wins. Like,
he'll be back.
It's, they have LeBron James. They have the best player on the court.
And
they
save,
know how to win. Home court advantage doesn't matter to them. I think
and
they
they've learned
win.
And they've learned how to
I hate
save.
To be like that, like –
and they've learned,
about it. That's no fun. But it's
I
true.
Also like the fact that Paul George is kind of coming into his own.
Emerged,
and now,
yeah.
now he can kind of step up and match.
Although
LeBron.
He shot like 35%
and then
the last
you have Lance
months,
Stevenson but. Getting into a fight with Wade earlier.
Lance Stevenson.
And you know, Wade's kind of
I'm
getting
pissed because I'm not an all-star.
And Stevenson's kind of the young buck, and now he's coming up a little bit. I think in a 7-game series, a guy like Wade might break down a little bit.
Really?
I mean, yeah.
I think they actually saved Wade the right way this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too.
I think every third game he didn't play.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So Wade's going to be fresh. Bosch is going to be fresh-ish.
George Hill and Mario Chalmers is kind of a push.
Yeah.
In the middle, you know.
Ray Allen's X
Factor
again.
If Bosch is hurt, who's going to stop David West from hitting that 20-footer?
Well, I just think
I
Chris Anderson.
Do you think Chris Anderson
can bother Chris Anderson, the Birdman.
Do you
listen,
think he can bother him?
Listen,
you know, there's
I think
actually a funny story.
Enough.
LeBron came home one day. This is a true story. And somebody had bought his kids Chris Anderson jerseys. Birdman. So it said Birdman on the back. He goes, why are you guys wearing Birdman jerseys, man? They go, Dad, Birdman's our favorite player. We're over you. It's a true story. Yeah, I heard that. It's pretty funny.
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
What'd you wear my jersey? Shut up,
but it's just
kind of
funny. No, but
want.
But there was a similar story like in 93, I remember, when Michael Jordan's kids were wearing BJ Armstrong jerseys.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, okay, I guess just roll BJ. That's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kukoc jerseys.
Why are Germans infatuated with the Birdman? You guys hear that audio clip from I think it's from last year's playoffs, and they have all the, you know, reporters, and then one of the German guy comes up, and he goes, can you tell me about Chris Anderson? And his impact on the game. It's like, what?
Wait, and they're Germans?
Yeah.
We're just going to leave it
we'll
right
have
there.
To tweet, we'll have to tweet Flula about it. We'll have to tweet Flula and see what he says
the
about
impact on
Chris
the
Anderson
game.
Plays like 7 minutes.
Why is he a
bird?
He's Anderson?
Why is he a Birdman? Yeah, I'll tweet out Flula.
Does he have wings? No.
No? Why is he Birdman?
Okay, I heard a great... This is good because you guys are Laker fans. I heard a really great commentary on the Spurs legacy. And obviously the argument was the Spurs from 99 on have been the better of the two franchises in comparison to the Lakers because of their consistency since 1998, excuse me.
I think there's an
any
argument
takes
there.
On that? I
sure.
mean,
I think there's an
try to
there.
Suspend
there's,
Laker
no, I'm
fan
saying,
fanship.
I'm saying, there's
okay,
a good argument.
There's nothing
there.
Wrong with that.
Yeah, there's a good argument there.
No,
yeah, I think that's a.
They have spread out a little bit more. They've kind of won and then lost and then come back and won again. How many do they have? Four.
Four.
So the Lakers, have five.
And yeah, Lakers
been,
have five.
And the Lakers and they've been in more. They've been in. I want to say six or seven. I think the Spurs have been in seven. So they've lost three.
They've lost three finals. And the Lakers lost one. So they've been in six.
So that's kind of the argument. It's like the Lakers have won five. Spurs have won four, but the Spurs have been in more.
Right. And Tim Duncan's still there.
I know.
Right. So did they win their first championship? They were good.
His second year.
They were good the year before. And then, Duncan's rookie year, I think.
Yeah,
it was his second year.
Because they were like the worst team, but it was because David Robinson was hurt. And then Robinson came back and Duncan got drafted. And they got like Sean Elliott.
No, Duncan's first year was 97-98, so it was his second year in the league.
You got your thing there. You can look it up.
It died.
Okay.
98-99 was when they won against the Knicks.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe it was his second year.
Okay. I don't know when Duncan's first year was, but there
Latrell
you go.
Latrell Sprewell's dread slapping Duncan in the face.
Yeah, John Starks.
His sweaty dread.
Was John Starks on that team? Alan Houston definitely was.
Houston was big time back then.
Starks was long gone.
So
Starks was selling hot dogs.
I've enjoyed this so much. I don't want to go yet.
Though.
I want to keep
talking. You're talking about a team that spans from having played Alan Houston,
amazing.
John Starks, and Charles Oakley to a team that's
LeBron
battling
James.
LeBron and Durant.
Yeah, it's kind of trippy.
And like essentially two or three generations later.
And still challenging those fools.
Totally. Yeah, and really Duncan's the stalwart there. What the Spurs have done in terms of drafting really unknown...
Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green.
Well, even like... what was that guy's name? The guy from Argentina.
Manu Ginobili.
Well, Manu Ginobili, but there's another one.
Oh, yeah.
Thiago Splitter.
Stephen Smith goes, Thiago Splitter.
Marco Bellinelli.
Okay, Scola was never on the Spurs,
no.
Right? Okay, and Tony Parker, so these international.
But how about picking up Patty Mills off waivers?
Patty Mills,
and he's been big time.
Who's the other guy that shoots? Who's super?
I love Popovich's quote on Patty Mills. Someone asked him why he wasn't getting a lot of playing time a couple weeks ago, and Pop just go, "Because he's fat." That's all he said. He's fat. Like, I guess he's lose a few pounds. That's all he said.
I love
three
it.
Words: because he's fat.
You know, speaking of Australian basketball,
oh gosh,
I just got to throw this in there because I was paying attention.
It's not Perth; it's Perth.
The Red Army, Luke, took home the championship.
Really?
This past weekend, Drake UU and James Ennis. Ennis was pretty much like, if not their best player, then one of the top two players on their team.
He
led the league
in
the Red Army. Does everybody on the team get the same amount of playing time?
No,
bunch of commies.
That's fantastic.
That is good. I like that.
That's a good one. Ennis and like guys like Sean Redditch and Jermaine Beal, some guys who are, I don't know what, but they beat Adelaide 36ers.
That'd be like 5 minutes and 21 seconds.
They don't call it
quarter.
The finals. They don't call it the finals.
So if you wanted to be the Red Army, you'd play 20 minutes. You play 21 minutes and 22 seconds a game
still,
per person.
He's still working that through. So what's the significance of the 36ers?
It must be something happened in 1836 or 1936 in Adelaide. But
what happened?
They call
a bunch
it the grand final. They don't call it the finals. They call it the grand final. And to
grand
listen,
with an E.
I would if any of you are basketball fans, I would go to YouTube and find the highlights because hearing an Australian announcer just get aggro about a James Ennis dunk, Ennis, he's going to get cut off. No, he doesn't. Slam dunk.
No,
he got way
doesn't.
Up on that one.
James Ennis.
It was very cool.
It is good.
And in the final game. In game three, UU only averaged 2 points and one rebound a game because he had two really good point guards playing ahead of him, and he's a point guard. And so in the last game, though, he was 2 for 2 from three-point range. And in the highlights, it shows one where he basically jabs in from the elbow and takes this huge step back to behind the three-point line and just drains on everybody. And they were already
dribble step back.
Huge, dude. Yeah. And they're already up by 20. But it was
how many fans actually show up to these games, though?
Sounds like playground.
You've been
ball.
There.
Well, but I haven't been to the basketball game. I went to a lot of the Aussie Rules footy games.
Oh, okay. You never went to Perth Arena?
The footy game is 40,000 people show up.
Luke,
epic.
You lived in Australia for a year?
Six months?
Okay, so...
It's a great country. Go there, please.
Sure, but...
And if you're single, Australian women love American men.
So you were... You were in Perth.
That was
and you
my
never,
plug.
You never went to the,
I'm gonna buy
the
my
Perth
ticket
Arena? You never went to the Perth Arena?
I didn't, know.
Oh, okay, all right.
It's Perth.
So, yeah, it's
Perth.
I would
it's
say
Perth. It's, no, really, it's not
the
Perth.
Perth Arena.
It's Perth. It's
Perth. You're Perth. So the
Perth
I'd say like 10, I'd say 10, 12,000 probably.
And that's a great city.
10,000?
That's the underrated Australian
Go look
city.
At the highlights.
I was in Perth for
is
like
Perth
months.
Is Perth the one on the West Coast?
On the West Coast.
Yeah.
That's a great...
It's like Australia's LA.
That is the... No.
It's out there by itself.
No, because LA has San Francisco and other
And then
towns,
you got to go over the Trans-Australian Railroad to get to all the other cities, right?
Or fly. Or
just hop on the flight. Yeah, it's like $70 a flight.
That's a long way on a train.
But taking that train to Melbourne is pretty awesome. Melbourne.
That's on the north side, right? Melbourne?
Melbourne is a great city. Now, the Sydney Opera House that you've seen pictures of out in the ocean is really as beautiful as you've seen pictures of. Great. I would recommend it. Even if you hate opera, go get drunk and watch the opera there.
What's the
but what about Perth?
The round
what about
arches?
Perth, though?
Perth is like, okay, what I love
because I'm going to get you on the podcast
great.
When he comes
can
back
Can I talk
to
him
country.
When he comes? Because I've been there.
Yeah. I'll maybe get him over here and we can, absolutely.
What I love about Perth.
I'm going to have Eversley, I think, hopefully this next week.
That'd be awesome,
I'm
too.
I'm working on it.
All right.
Also, Sullivan Groves, who's going to get drafted in the NFL draft.
What I love about Perth is that's the way Americans envision Australia.
Okay.
Is Perth. Perthites. They're real hard nosed. In fact, I'll tell you a funny story. When I went to Perth, a bunch of these Aussie boys, they don't like American guys at first because we tend to steal their women for one, because we tip. We tend to steal their women. And for two,
so I can't go over there with my Aussie accent and talk like
they
that.
Just think, they just
you
think.
Can tip. You can tip real good, though.
It's true. They just think that we're just like totally panty waist American boys.
Yeah.
So what they did was, I had never played Aussie rules footy, which is not entirely rugby. It's rugby meets American football meets soccer. And I get there, and these Aussie boys, I met it was to a friend through a friend, go, hey. And they pass me this Aussie rules footy ball, and they go, you in for a game, American boy? And I go, sure. Totally. Well, for those of you who haven't seen me, I'm a pretty big man. And so I felt comfortable with these Aussie rules, with these Aussie boys playing.
I think you probably run some guys over if you really wanted to.
Well, so the story is really funny. So this kid who was picking on me for like the whole day, because I was the American kid, I'm the American bloke, all this stuff.
Bloke.
He kicks it off, and he kicks it off to me first out of all the players.
Because
he's thinking, oh, I'm going to run this fool over. Well, I'm like, come on, man. So I'm running, and I straight run the fool over. Like, I hammer the guy. Straight clowny
just,
on the fool.
Just straight trucked his ass.
I went straight clowny on the fool, okay? I trucked over his
Except
butt.
Except you had the ball.
He got up, and this is what's cool about Aussie guys, though. He got up, and he goes, he's all dazed, and he goes, this bloke is cool, and he throws me the ball. He goes, drinks on me tonight. And American guys can never out-drink an Aussie. They always win that game.
No.
But,
so it's like going to prison. Just find the biggest guy.
So, okay, but I want
to. So I just want to say congratulations to Drake Uyu and James Ennis. You know,
totally.
They were Big West competitors last year. And I think it's kind of cool that they both ended up on the same team.
That is cool.
Ennis got drafted by the Heat and is on loan.
What do you think about this? What do you think about
this? You
can
get a Uyu or Ennis jersey online for $100.
What do you think about this kid who they're all okay. all the NBA players have? I was going to make a funny comment. All the NBA players have. Hardness over, okay. Have boners over. This point guard that plays in Australia.
It's called the basketball boner.
He's like 6'7". He averages like 7 points a game, but they're all up on his jock right now. The NBA.
How
exact.
Old is he?
He's like 19.
Okay, so he's playing professionally in Australia
at 19.
What team do you know? We can ask you about him.
No, the kid.
Dante Exum. Dante Exum.
Okay.
The one
have you seen previews on
him? Drake about him if
yeah, because he's seen him play a lot.
I'm sure he has. Yeah, I'm sure he's played against him.
And then Australia also has a kid who plays out in Sydney, I think. And he's no joke. I saw previews of this guy.
Sydney Kings.
He's 7 foot and he plays small forward.
Yeah,
I'm not even kidding.
Like Isaiah Austin.
Yeah,
Baylor.
Yeah,
no, if he plays center, he doesn't play small forward.
He shoots threes and stuff.
So centers can shoot threes.
He dribbles between his legs during games. He was a point guard growing up.
Doesn't he only have one eye?
Yep.
He can only
really?
See
one that works. Yeah.
Yeah. He can only see out of one eye.
Really?
Yep.
I never knew that.
Yeah. You should watch. That.
I wouldn't draft.
Look
him,
it up on ESPN.
Watch the tournament. I remember watching. Yeah, they had their
because when they're interviewing him, one's just looking straight.
He's got. I don't know how it works.
You knew?
Yeah. He like degenerated over time.
Hey, over here, buddy.
Yeah. It like degenerated over time.
That's not very nice.
No.
It's not nice at all. But I wasn't trying to be
kind of like mean. Richard Thurman in high school. I didn't know one of his eyes was going the other way. And I threw a medicine ball at him, and it hit him in the head. And then he turned around, and he kind of go, "Oh shit! Did I knock this guy's eye sideways?" Like, no, no, he's normally. I'm like, "Oh, thank God!" Remember Richard Thurman? Yes.
No,
short you for Dick. Like, Dick for short. No.
You were like thankful. No, oh, thank God!
Because I didn't really notice him before, you know.
All right. Anything else you guys want to add? We've Sorry. Probably gone too long already.
That was. Okay.
I just want to say that I love you guys.
Nice to have you guys here.
I love you, man.
And if you know, be on the lookout. I'm going to try to get Eversley and also Sullivan Groves. The NFL draft is coming up in a little bit, and Sullivan should be. I think he should be a draft pick.
That's
going to
be pretty cool to see. Yeah.
He's a 300 pounder who's quick as a lot of the guys who.
Before we go and before you get Eversley, do you know are there any updates on Eversley? Is he
in terms of
his plans?
Yeah, I think he's. I'm going to ask him about it, but I've seen tweets about like. Maybe like having an agent or something. So I'm sure he'll probably go the way of like Royer and UU and Jordan Lewis, who's playing in Israel. Christina Santiago, who's playing in Bulgaria.
Oh, like, Jordan's playing in Israel.
Yeah, he's his mom's Israel is his mom's Jewish, I think, or he has Jewish heritage. So
what's Amari up to?
I don't know. He was in Cyprus the last time I checked. Okay. So
the Isle of Crete.
Yeah, I mean, so Cal Poly does have a footprint internationally in basketball. And obviously Drake has had the most success. You know, I'd say the Australian League is not anything to slouch at. And and Drake, you know, seems like he's got a lot better shot this year.
So what does that league rank among foreign leagues?
I bet it would be like in the top
like
five.
Fifth.
I bet like the Spanish league's better.
Like put it this way, in comparison to American basketball, which isn't fair, but like, okay, no, the all-time foreign players, probably like Dirk, Arvidas was pretty big time. And Australia, the big time player is Luke Longley.
Could the UConn
Huskies, still came and started.
Could the UConn Shane Huskies Heal. On their best day beat the best team out of the Australian league?
Probably not.
No.
They could,
maybe though.
Yes, they could. Absolutely.
On their best day? Yeah. It would be competitive.
No. Even not on their best day, they could challenge.
No, it would
team's
be competitive.
Best days,
yeah.
It would be competitive no matter what.
The Perth team is very big and strong. They have a lot of like 6'10 dudes who are like white, you know, like not leapers. Like Ennis like set that league on fire just because he had so many
just
dunks
big old trees.
On, he'd run out.
Like Shabazz?
They play a lot of slow down kind of ball.
Like here's how I compare, like when you ask those questions, Shabazz Napier would probably compete for an MVP award in Australia, no problem.
Yeah,
no, he's going to be drafted.
He'll
be
James Ennis.
Yeah.
James
I'm saying,
competed.
but as a pro in the NBA,
James Ennis,
he
out
probably
of the
won't
West.
Be like an MVP type of guy.
Yeah, I would compare him to maybe like an Aaron Brooks type of guy, something like that.
Ennis was competing for the MVP.
Yeah,
this
he
year.
Was. He was big time. This
yeah,
year.
He was 22-8. You know, he was I think third in scoring and fourth in rebounding.
He was big time. Yeah.
Do they have the key that's kind of like a trapezoid?
I don't think so. I think they've gotten rid of that in international basketball.
The Red Storm, where everybody plays 22 minutes and 21 seconds a game.
The Red Army, yeah.
The Red Army.
Look it up, guys. It's really cool. And,
Coach Stalin.
And Drake is...
It's not a hairpiece.
You know, I think it's really cool. Check it out. If you have any questions or want to get in touch with us, you can tweet us at Fansmanship or find our pictures on Facebook.com/Fansmanship. And maybe we'll see you out at the Cal Poly
check
baseball game.
Check us out and check out the Mustangs. They're hopefully going places.
Yeah, it's going to be
the
fun.
Diamond.
For sure.
On the diamond.
So for Luke and Andy, I'm Owen.
Peace.
And we'll catch you next time.
Peace.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Streetlights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Trouble town, oh, can't find my way.
front page of the news. Keep trying to find my way back home, but the sun's out on.